Hello everyone and welcome back to the NBL Pocket Podcast. My guest today is Guy Neville. Guy is the General Manager of Digital Content and Delivery at the National Basketball Association. First and foremost, apologies for the sound in this episode. I spoke to Guy over the phone and it's always difficult to record on the phone, but I think the sound's not too bad. Nonetheless, Guy and I went on to speak about the NBL One and the NBL's plans for NBL One in its off-season. We spoke about Guy's career progression from the Sydney Kings through to his current position with the NBL. We talked about how the NBL navigates and structures content to and for the major social media platforms, Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, and now most recently the new deal with Twitch. We go into that at length. We also talk about the Next Stars, the many positives that have come from the Next Stars, the challenges of not only initially starting up the Next Stars, but going on into the future. And then we also talked about NBL podcasting. There's a couple of podcasts on the NBL, including the one you're listening to now. We spoke about where he sees that space and where he sees its development and potential. And that is, amongst other things, what Guy and I spoke about, and I hope you enjoy it. We were talking quickly about NBL One. Like, what's the NBL's hope with NBL One and hopes for the future with it?
There's a couple of different, I guess, goals with it. Part of it's just getting the NBL into grassroots. We want kids who are going through and playing in our local associations to just know the NBL brand from a young age. It's something we probably haven't had for a little while. Where as kids coming through, they're obviously naturally drawn to the NBA and the big stars there. And there's no shortage of Ben Simmons singlets running around at, you know, every local stadium that you go to. But our goal with NBL One is to try to get back in there and also just connect the pathway, have a tangible pathway for players coming through to the NBL and importantly the WNBL as well. That's been a really big part of our business is, kind of getting in touch with another audience and, really showcasing the athletes because that's what we want to do out of it.
Yeah, because I think a couple of years ago, and when I say a couple, I mean sort of a decade or so ago, I don't know if that pathway to the NBL specifically was that well-tread or well-laid out. It was an odd way that juniors would kind of make their way through, and obviously the hope was maybe, the grand hope was NBA and college, and then the NBL, it didn't quite cement itself in the junior program, so I guess that's where you're trying to get in there with NBL One.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah. And I think there's people that are a lot more open to the pathway these days. Mm-hmm. Like, you see a guy like Angus Glover, who initially had an offer from St. Mary's, and that's even before he did his knee over at the Hoop Summit. But guys like that saw opportunities in the NBL. And we've seen quite a few of those kids who are coming out of the Centre of Excellence and kind of weighing up their options. Do I go over to college and try to make it happen for 4 years, or do I get a head start on my career?
Right.
And I think, over the last couple of years, we've built enough credibility to showcase the athletes in a meaningful way, because I think that's what you want when you're coming through. You want opportunities. And I think the league's done a really good job, especially Jeremy and Larry, in conjunction with the Players Association, in opening up those opportunities for them. That's been a big piece.
And just on that, on Jeremy and Larry, what's their style? Are they quite hands-on? Are they quite jovial, friendly? Are they like a Paul Smith at the Sydney Kings who's pretty jokey and fun? Or are they? Where do they sort of sit on the spectrum?
It's a bit of everything with them. I've known Larry and Jeremy for a long time because I joined the NBL prior to Larry actually owning the league. So I was up in Sydney with the old regime and came down when Larry took over. But he's hands-on where he needs to be, and there's certain things that he wants done. But he's an incredible guy to work with, incredibly entrepreneurial. One of those people, if you bring a good idea to him, he'll listen. And whether it's a yes or a no or anything, he'll listen to it and give you the opportunity to, try and take a step forward for the business. And I think Jeremy's the same. As Andy Crook, our COO, you have a lot of direct comms with all of them, but they're all very open-minded. And I think that's what the reason that we've had some successes in particular is the ability of people in this business to not just say no. If something's brought on the table, it's very rare that the default reaction is no. It's, all right, tell me more. How do we make this work? How do we commercialize it? How do we take it to the next level? I think that's really exciting. It's one thing I love about being here is that you've got such a great leadership team here that I guess give the opportunity to grow.
Right. Guy, let's take a step back. I looked at your Wikipedia page, not Wikipedia, LinkedIn. Your title is General Manager, Digital Content and Delivery. What is that specifically, and how did you define that title, and what do you do day to day?
Yeah, sure. I guess to put it in a nutshell, essentially what I do is oversee all the content that you see across the NBL's digital platforms. Mm-hmm. So that's anything on the website, across social media, our NBL app, NBL TV. And within that, it's you know, working with a team that we've got here. So team Mike Corbett, who heads up our creative and social day-to-day, Darren Barker, any of those good graphics or videos you see on our social channels generally come from him. Mark, the Statman Slocum, a.k.a. NBL Facts, who everyone knows, is an important member of the team. And then it's also working with all our contributors and collaborators, so guys like Liam Santamaria, Tom Hirsch, Chris Pike, Paul O'Kennedy, just to name a few, working with them to conceptualise pieces and roll them out.
Yep. You studied at the University of Sydney, Bachelor of Media and Communications. My question there is, because I've got a number of people who listen who are students or hobbyists of sort of sports media. Did you enjoy your time at Sydney University studying that degree? And do you find the degree applicable to what you're doing now?
Yeah, I love my time at Sydney. The irony is, and when I tell people, they were a bit surprised, but I actually started working at the NBL during my second year of university. So the first year of uni, the whole first year, I actually interned with the Kings, which was anything from handing out tickets pre-game to setting up the venue. I was just eager to be involved, so I took that opportunity. And then come the second year of university, I actually started working at the NBL. So the regime at the time, and Steve Dunn, who was the interim CEO, Fraser Neal, those kind of guys, gave me the opportunity to work full-time and do uni full-time. So I duck off from the office to go to my tutorials 2 days a week in the afternoon. And while I was there, I was probably answering emails from the NBL. But, it was a lot of both. But I love my time at university, but I don't think you can ever speak highly enough of getting out there, getting your hands dirty, and an environment like that with the NBL where it's effectively a startup. Like, yeah, it was a small team up there. It was a small team to begin down in Melbourne, but up in Sydney was a real small team. And everyone was just, you know, doing what they needed to showcase the product. There's no better education than, I guess, getting on the tools and just doing it.
And did you play basketball? And was it basketball was the thrust of it and marketing you saw as a way to keep going with it? Or were you a marketer first, basketball second? Where do you kind of sit there?
The literal term ball is life applies. I played, I coached, I refereed, I did every damn thing I could because I loved the game. And it got to that point and I said, well, you know, how can I make this a job? And I remember my dad at the time saying, if only you could remember, you know, XYZ stats as well as you could remember your maths, you could actually go pretty well. And I said, you know, ironically, when I actually ended up working at the NBL and doing what I'm doing now, I said, Dad, turns out that it paid off knowing all those stupid basketball facts. But
It said on your LinkedIn you did a year at Channel 9. Is that in conjunction when they had the basketball, or is that something separate?
No, that's actually a real, diversion off the path for a moment where essentially what it was, there was funding from 9MSN for Australia's first ever mixed martial arts website. And I was a journal and content producer and learned a lot during my time at 9MSN. It was called MMA Canvas from a guy named Adam Ireland, who was running it. And I think that was a really good introduction into commercializing content, because previously I think that one of the things that people learn in university and, you know, as they're coming through or lack thereof, is around the commercial aspect of it, because the reality of any business is there is a commercial side to it in many cases. And you know, there's the hard-hitting reporter in you that wants to do certain things, but there's the reality of the world, which is, you know, revenue generation and commercial side. So that was a big diversion for me, but it was incredible experience, and I actually did that while I was at the King. So that was just some part-time work.
And what made you jump back? So then you went from Channel 9, and then, if I'm not mistaken, you jumped straight back in or full-time into the NBL itself. What made you make that jump, or was that a natural switch?
Yeah, it was all kind of in parallel, and I was doing the NBL camp track for as long as I could. But essentially the catalyst was Basketball Australia and the NBL demerged. So BA were running the league up until a point. The owners of the clubs were a bit frustrated with lack of commercial emphasis on the league, and as a result, they decided to demerge from Basketball Australia. And one of the big players in that whole decision was Steve Dunn, who was a part owner of the Kings at the time, part of a consortium of owners. Mm-hmm. And I knew Steve well from my time at the Kings, and he knew what I was kind of doing. And when he took over as interim CEO of the NBL, he said, "Hey, mate, I just need someone to pop into the office 2 days a week, keep some stuff up on social media, make people aware that we actually exist." So it started as a 2 day a week role, went to 3 days, 4 days, 5 days, and very quickly 7 days. And that's how I ended up there. It was just a really great opportunity given to me by Steve, and entrusted with that, because I was 19 at the time. That was, I'm still at university. Didn't really have too many runs on the board. I had interned at the Kings for quite a long time, but it was a big kind of display of faith from them, which I was very appreciative of.
We're talking about commercial aspects of the game. Let's talk about that. We've just had the new uniforms come out, the Looney Tunes uniforms, obviously, or seemingly aimed at a pretty young demographic. My question to you guys, what is the target audience of the NBL? Is it going for families? Is it going for young men, women? What's the target audience?
We've got a really open-minded approach to this, and this is something our marketing team's kind of curated, and I think is actually a really good way of putting it. We say that our target audience are entertainment seekers. They don't have to be sport fans. They don't have to be basketball diehards. They can be anyone, but they want to be entertained. If you're going to a venue, and I'm sure you've been to an NBL game, and a lot of the people probably listening have, you go there and it's 2 hours of non-stop entertainment. You know, the whistle goes and there's some music playing, there's something on the court, there's something on the big screen. So for that 2 hour period, you're entertained. And you don't have to be a diehard basketball fan to enjoy it. You could be, there before you went for a night out, you could be taking the kids because the kid, your son or daughter plays basketball, and that's what gets you in. But you're entertained for 2 hours. And I guess what we try to do on our digital platforms is carry that through. I guess we've got our media and marketing arms of business, so they're kind of external comps. So they're all about pulling people into the funnel. So, whether it's billboard advertising, display advertising, stories in print media and media, they're trying to make people aware. Then they kind of drive people into the funnel. Once they get into the funnel, it's my job and our team's job to make sure they're engaged, they're entertained, they are informed, they want to hang around our channels, and they're, growing to what we call an avid fan of the sport, which, if you're getting technical, is someone who rates their interest in the NBL like 4 or 5 out of 5.
Right. And at present, what would be the typical NBL consumer profile? What would that be? Or is there something?
Based on the data, it's a young male, 18 to 34.
Yeah.
That's, if you look at our Instagram audience in particular, it heavily skews in that direction. Ever so much, it's also growing in the US, which is something that we've really had to adjust to on our side. Yeah. It's got its own kind of set of challenges, but a larger percentage of our audience, especially obviously with the next stars coming in, has shifted to the US. So we've had to tailor a bit of content in that direction, which I'm sure, at times we get criticism potentially for, a bit too much LaMelo content. But, we have to balance that piece around telling the stories of every team, which, I think we do a pretty good job of, but we really make an effort with. It's not just, LaMelo, it's not just RJ Hampton, it's not just Sydney, it's not just Melbourne. It's Cairns, the Giant Killers.
Yeah, saw that just today.
Yeah, it's Illawarra coming through. It's Adelaide running gun, Joey Wright. Like, there's so many good stories in our league, and that's why it's so good having people like Lamb, like Tom Hirsch, who tell those stories so well.
Mm.
And I think a big part of our broadcast as well is telling those stories too.
Mm.
Yeah.
You spoke about how the league is growing in reputation in the United States. My question to you would be, how do you take, or how does it translate a fan in America to dollars and cents in Australia? How do you look to retain that fan or commercialize that fan? That to me is an odd one. How does that work?
Yeah, I think there's a couple of different challenges there, but one of which is, you know, our audience on Instagram, for example. That I remember the day that LaMelo signed, we had 73,000 followers, and we've more than doubled that in less than 6 months.
On Instagram?
Yeah, on Instagram.
You're at 150K.
154.
154K, pardon me. I've got that written down.
Yep.
I rounded down. I don't know why.
But yeah, so that's grown rapidly. Mm. But a lot of those people are in the US, like I said. And the one thing we've observed, and I look at it as a cautionary tale, is that this has been done before. The Ball family went to Lithuania. They went to a team there. A lot of eyeballs got directed in that direction. And I don't think in that case enough was done to retain them. And that's a big strategy of ours is, you know, how do we retain these people and continue to grow that audience from next year and the year on, the next crop of next stars, which, you know, we're very mindful of the fact that there isn't another LaMelo. There is not another player that would come in through the Next Stars program that has 5 million followers. Yeah. He's the unicorn of all unicorns. He has more followers than Zion. Like, you know, you can't even put into context how insane that kind of level of audience is. But for us, the commercial aspect is always the toughest piece, because I think, especially in this day and age, there's traditional kind of media buyers and advertising that people do. But more and more it's moving into that branded content space. But you need an open-minded partner. You need a progressive thinking business who, you know, understand that they can, you know, go in this direction and they'll see tangible results. And I think, you know, more of our kind of commercial interest was from people like Twitch and Facebook, wanting the content, because it is more and more about content. And having those rights and having them on the platform. So I think you'll see a bit of stuff coming next year around more so how we try and leverage that audience that we've built. So stay tuned.
How big a consideration was it as well about improving, with the Next Stars, for example, bumping the Instagram up or just sort of interest in the league in general, not just to get fans, but also to increase credibility amongst, you know, players that come in? I think we've seen a glut of talent come in that's not Next Stars, and I think that's sort of a result of that. Was that a byproduct of the Next Stars program, or before it started or was implemented, you had that thought?
I think it goes back a few years to changes that were made to the salary and contracting rules, relating to the soft cap, obviously, and other changes, but we've incentivized teams to take the risk on these big players to begin with. But then I think the increased visibility of the league overall has helped exponentially. Next Stars or not, people were aware of us. I personally have not been to Summer League, but Liam gets the benefit of sweating it out over in Vegas. And, you know, between him, Jeremy, Tommy Greer, the people that come back and they tell the stories, and I guess the chatter over there is all about us. You know, we pay our players, you get great exposure. You know, the stadiums are incredible, the fans are incredible. It's a great experience for an athlete coming down here. That I can't see too many cons in coming down here. And yeah, I must have swayed Xavier Cooks. One week he was going to Europe, the next week he was staying in Sydney. So it must be the Sydney beaches.
Let's talk about each individual media platform and how you cater certain content to that particular one. So let's say with Twitter, right? Twitter, you've got 62.1K followers, a lot less than the other two. What kind of content do you push through Twitter that you wouldn't necessarily push through Facebook or Instagram, or what's the slight change you make to tailor to that medium?
Yeah, I guess we divide all of our content that we produce up into three buckets. Mm-hmm. So the first one is what we call on the go or immediate. So that's someone who's scrolling through the feed on Twitter or Instagram mostly, less Facebook these days due to the algorithm, but they're scrolling through. They're not necessarily expecting to see a piece of NBL content, but when they do, it's a short form highlight. You know, they're pleasantly surprised to see it. And that's kind of that bucket, which is the immediate piece. Mm-hmm. And then we move to lean forward or interactive. So we look at that as someone who's seeking out the content. They want to go watch the game highlights. So they go to our website or the app. They go to our Instagram to catch up on the scores or something of that nature. Mm-hmm. Or they go and watch a condensed game on NBL TV. And then the third bucket is what we call the lean back experience or the immersive experience. So that's someone engaging with our content for an extended period of time. It's sitting on the couch, watching on TV, watching on Twitch, NBL TV, SBS On Demand, wherever it might be, but they're engaged for, you know, a portion of that 2-hour period, right, with our content. So they're the kind of three buckets, and we cater the content in that way because, you know, we know shorter form stuff works on certain platforms, and, you know, some of that longer form stuff, especially with Facebook, the algorithm these days rewards longer form content that's 3 minutes plus. I guess as a business, Facebook are trying to keep people on their platform for a longer period of time. Mm. So longer form content is valued higher within the algorithm. So that's a piece that we've had to do around, you know, between NBL overtime, 3 minute plus highlights, all those kind of things. They're trending much better on Facebook due to changes in their algorithm recently.
Interesting. Here's an interesting one. You may have seen the advertisements on television for Channel 10, where they've sort of done the Jimmy Kimmel thing where they have a couple of celebrities from Channel 10 read out tweets that are negative or something like that. What do you think about that? Like, how do you drive positivity online? Like, social media, it's got a big smear of it for being negative at times, and certainly around the NBL as well. It happens with everything. How do you try and drive positivity, or are you eager for engagement of any kind, be it negative, much like what Channel 10 are doing?
It is tough. Like, after a game, you know, you always find that all people want to talk about are the performances of players, coaches, referees, the commentators. And unfortunately, a lot of that, the default is to skew towards criticism. I think it's our job to drive the conversation, discussion in a more positive direction wherever we can. Mm. But in saying that, I think we, even as the NBL, have a duty to remain somewhat objective and drive the conversation if there's a real issue we need to. I think that was a big piece of introducing NBL Overtime, which was having a diverse range of opinions on a topic that's not necessarily the NBL, and, you know, that's that individual's opinion, but we'll have the discussion if it's warranted. And I think that's the other great thing at the moment. We have so many great shows, podcasts, much like yours, the basketball show, all these shows about Trash Talk, Sports Bet, all these great shows popping up where, you know, the discussion around the game is great. I don't think, you know, anyone looks at a show in our office and says, oh, that's bad. You know, more people talking about us is great. And I think, you know, it's as much positive as it is negative at times, but, you know, overwhelmingly recently we've just seen so much positivity around the league. And yeah, it is difficult and sometimes to drive positivity online, but, you know, we're here to drive the discussion, and that's I guess what a lot of what we do in our content space seeks to do.
Right, you're in digital. If you look at the NBA, TV ratings are dropping seemingly over there in the United States. Do you see that trend in the NBL? Are you concerned about that, or are consumer habits just changing? Let's talk about the NBA. What do you think that issue is? Why do you think that's the way it is?
I think the NBA is an interesting one because they obviously point to, you know, the demise of the Warriors, for example, or things of that nature. And, you know, they influence ratings, but it's as much, there's so many factors that go into it, and we see it on our games. Like, a time slot impacts a game just as much as who's playing. It's really interesting, and, like, you know, from us, like, our TV ratings have actually gone up, but that's in large part due to just having greater visibility and increase of games on free-to-air, SBS Viceland, and, you know, ESPN have been an incredible partner. Like, I don't think you watch ESPN an NBA game on there and don't get told about the NBL. And yeah, that's a big piece of what we're trying to do is convert NBA fans into NBL fans. Mm. So there's a natural alignment there, which is really great. But yeah, we're definitely seeing trends in the industry. But we think we're pretty uniquely positioned because the NBL actually produces its own broadcast itself. Like we have our own internal kind of production team that work with facilities companies to produce it. We own all the content, so we're not really hamstrung by restrictions that broadcasters traditionally put on sports around distribution. So you know, there's not necessarily a limitation to how many highlights we can share on social media, whereas in other sports, that's very heavily guarded by the broadcaster. And you know, in saying that, we're not collecting billion-dollar TV rights deals as a result at the moment, but we are able to commercialize the product in different ways, which gives us different opportunities. And I think Larry said it a fair few times, and it's his mantra at the moment, that if someone wants to watch us somewhere, we'll be there. You know, people dictate consumption habits, not the industry. It's the fans who say, I want to watch on Twitch, I want to watch on Facebook, I want an OTT solution, I want to watch on TV, I want it easily to find. And, you know, sometimes I guess people could probably look at us and go, geez, they're on a lot of channels. But, you know, wherever you want to watch us, we're probably there in some way, shape or form. Mm. And the only reason we can do that is because of our position with our broadcast and owning the content. I know I've spoken to people in and around other sports, and they kill to have the freedom that we do. Right. And that's a great thing with us, where you know, if we want to do something, more than likely we can, and we don't have to ask permission from a broadcast partner, because we've got partners that are open-minded as well, between SBS and ESPN.
You spoke about other sports. Like, I mean, you read a lot of things, and obviously basketball, and the NBL is on that upward upturn. I want to talk to you about, you're in digital. Do you see the part, I mean, I had Jeff Van Groningen on this podcast a while ago, and he said how other sports just have these pillars of sort of well-sustained media, print and TV, that the NBL's never really had access to. Are you excited by what you've got now, digital versus the older stuff?
Yeah, definitely. I think we've got a great mix at the moment. I think, you know, we're right at that place and positions where, you know, we've got our media team, Nick Johnston, Luke Sicari, they're doing an amazing job of getting us out there. And the clubs in particular, the clubs' media managers are pretty incredible as far as what they can get with earned media and working with those media outlets to tell great stories. And I think the best thing at the moment is that those news outlets want to tell our story, which, you know, previously we'll be knocking down their door to make it happen. Now they're coming to us and saying, hey, we want to tell a story on this, for example. And they're the ones making the calls, not necessarily us all the time. So that's really exciting. But especially in digital, and I spoke to like the shows and different pieces of content that are popping up around the NBL. This hasn't happened in a while. Like, you know, you kind of saw it bubbling away last year, but now it feels like, you know, we're hitting that point where people see this as something they want to engage with, they want to, you know, create a show about, they want to write articles about. You know, you look at the guys at Pick and Roll and you know, how many journalists have come through there as a pathway. It's exciting. It's an incredibly exciting time for basketball generally in Australia. And, you know, I think we've done our bit, but there's no shortage of people out there that are doing their bit as well.
When the league switched from Fox Sports to ESPN, that to me just felt like more of a brand alignment. Like ESPN, you think ESPN, you think American sports, basketball's an American sport. Did you feel that way going over to ESPN? And did you feel like Fox Sports was, you know, a good marriage or a bad marriage, or prefer ESPN? What do you think?
I think there's still alignment with Fox Sports, and they're a great partner that we've worked with. I think the ESPN alignment, like you said, did make sense for our brand and, you know, being around the NBA. You know, it's never a bad thing. And that NBA alignment is something that, you know, we're always striving for, whether you're talking about us in the same breath as the NBA draft or NBA Summer League or NBA preseason. If there's an NBA event that we're not involved in, I'd be shocked. So, you know, pushing that alignment's really big. But, you know, Fox Sports is still a great partner. We still have games on KO and, you know, ESPN are a great partner as well. They're the home of basketball and they had a great campaign running recently with, you know, they've got NCAA, WNBA, NBA, NBL, you know, it's all in one spot. And we've got a similar alignment now with SBS Viceland too, acquired rights to the NBA. And, not that we may have known that was happening when we did that deal, and it made sense to, you know, become another home of basketball, but there's a freeware home of basketball, and there's a subscription TV home of basketball.
Let's talk about Twitch. Twitch is one that's new to me. I've known of it, more of a, you know, video game sort of streaming commentary type stuff. When that idea, was that an idea that Twitch sort of grabbed you guys at the NBL, or you at the NBL reached out to Twitch? How did that bore itself?
The Twitch partnership's a fun one. It's been years in the making, ironically. So Larry and Jeremy are both massive, you know, proponents of Twitch, and, you know, really, I think, did their due diligence on the esports space generally, because there are obviously other opportunities that arise there. But, you know, within that whole deep dive into the space, you know, Twitch came out as a new channel with a new audience, new ways to engage, you know, whether it be extensions that we've got on our channel at the moment with stats and polling, or the co-streaming aspect. It just, all these different pieces kind of came out, and it was just a new exciting channel that, you know, and again, like a lot of our partners, they're really open-minded and want to try new things with us. But it really picked up steam, and the conversation was a bit easier naturally when we had more global relevance with the Nextstars coming in, but also when Twitch established a bit more of a presence in Australia. But I think the biggest catalyst was when they had a proven case of success, which was what they did with the NBA G League and then USA Basketball. So a lot of it was driven by that, but I think what's significant about that deal is that it's actually a two-year arrangement, so we'll be on Twitch next year as well. And what we're trying to do with Twitch is the co-streaming is about building a community on Twitch, a community of people who are streaming our games, who are watching our games on different channels. Again, back to that, however you want to watch it, you can. If you want to watch it and commentate it, go ahead. There's a channel to do so. So I think that's a big part of what we're doing, is trying to build a new community on Twitch. And there's a couple other exciting things that will come out there soon.
Let's talk about... Oh, here we go. Podcasting. That's what I want to ask you about. So obviously I do my podcast. It's an interesting... I've read a stat that something like half of Americans... And we keep harping on about Americans, but they're a key thing to look at. Half of Americans engage with podcasts. Now, that could be sports or anything in between. The number is not quite as big in Australia. Where do you stand on podcasts? What do you like about them? Where do you see their growth in this country?
I think they are going to continue to grow, as, you know, it's just the natural shift from people away from being forced to view or consume content on someone else's schedule to viewing it on their own schedule. Like, you know, no one wants to be told you have to sit down and watch TV at this time to watch this show. That those days have, you know, been and gone. You want to sit down and watch them when you want to watch them. You want to watch 5 episodes? Go ahead. That's that whole shift in, I guess, the mindset of people. And, you know, it probably started in TV and movies, all those kind of channels, but it's definitely shifted into audio. And I particularly like a lot of what it happens in the US, which is probably more of those longer form conversational pieces. You know, The Ringer has a great podcast. Pretty sure it's a Ringer with Vince Carter. And, you know, he's with a host, and, you know, that player on player kind of interaction, telling stories, and, you know, the athletes getting involved and, you know, telling their stories in that format is incredible. You know, the Howie Games is a great one. I recall when Andrew Bogut did that, and Joe Ingles has done one as well. And they're just, you know, just a long conversation about life and sport. And I think that's a great use of the platform, but it's one that's only going to grow over time. And, you know, it pleases me to see all these podcasts popping up. I saw another one, NBL One-on-One podcast, pop up the other day. There's fantasy podcasts. You know, like I said, the more people talking about us, the better. And, you know, we kind of encourage it, whatever we can do to help people get to that point. We try to be as transparent with what we're doing as possible, so people can talk about us. And, you know, like I said, that positivity online, having a discussion about stuff, that's what we want.
Oh, that was my next question. I was going to say, to someone who's, say, thinking about starting a podcast, or a little bit anxious or nervous or embarrassed, because it's quite a step to put your voice out there. What would be your advice to them? Or even if it's a... Actually, no, let's go with that. What would be your advice to someone who's wanting to take that step of engaging with the league? What would you advise them to do?
I think Twitter's a great place to do it. Like, if you want to kind of divide up our audience, those quite, you know, you've got your journalists on there, that's where they kind of, there's a lot of discussion about the league that naturally transpires on there, as opposed to in the Facebook comments, which can sometimes be a bit of a different discussion. So on Twitter, definitely, there's great people to follow and, you know, getting insights from other people. And I think the best thing, I can speak to myself, like if someone DMs me on Twitter, I'm happy to, you know, share some information. And, you know, same with Liam, Tom.
I've contacted them, and they've all been not only, you know, really pleasant, but also prompt and, yeah, very kind with their time.
Yeah, like, that's the NBL community as a whole. Like, I think everyone in and around the NBL and in and around basketball generally just want this to fly. So if someone asks for help, they're ready to. There's no hesitation because, you know, they know that the next Liam Santa Maria, you know, needs someone to learn from. They need, you know, someone to, the next commentator, you know, needs someone to be guided by. There's so many different opportunities now that are kind of coming through our sport that, yeah, all these people on Twitter and elsewhere are more than happy to, you know, share their knowledge and impart some wisdom. Just maybe steer clear of homicide. He might yell at you. That deep drops.
My next question was about that, about saying something up. Players, how do you manage that? And I don't know if it's your field specifically, but how do you manage that balance between being really open with your players, but protecting their privacy and things like that? And that question, but also sort of how it pertains to salaries. Like, what's your thought on that, as well as openness with players and fans?
I definitely don't have an opinion on salaries and that kind of stuff being public. Not, definitely not my place to speak on those kind of things. But I think our players do a really good job of engaging with fans in around the community. And a lot of that's driven by the clubs. Like, our clubs and the people that work at the clubs are incredible as far as, you know, what they do with their players, looking out for them, you know, coordinating their time. But I think a lot of it kind of stems from there. But yeah, players are much like everyone else. They just want to see the game grow, so they'll engage on social media for the most part. They're out in the community doing some great things. So I think, yeah, the players are our number one advocate. So, you know, if anything, in my role, all I ever want to do is, you know, shine a light on them. Like, if there's a great young player coming through, there's absolutely nothing more pleasing than telling their story, or, you know, driving their brand. Like, I recall one being Finn Delaney. Mike, our social guy, was, you know, he was just inspired one night when he was on the keyboard and threw out the Finn Diesel line. And, you know, that caught on. We're at the preseason blitz, and he again did Wiley Coyote for Jacob Wiley. He texted it to Liam. Liam dropped it on the call, and now he's changed his Instagram handle to Wiley Coyote. Yeah, there's little things like that. Yeah, we just like to shine a light on, you know, anything we can do to celebrate players, we definitely do.
Are they all in control of their own Twitter accounts, or do they have sort of a guidance from you and the NBL itself?
No, definitely not. They have complete control over those kind of channels. Yeah, we definitely don't try and restrict any of those kind of channels. The players are great on them, and if anything, we encourage them. Like, we don't have a great deal of interaction with players day to day. A lot of my interaction comes when we see them at media day and those kind of events. Or I've been to China the last couple of years and have had some great interactions with players there. But from a day-to-day perspective, we don't have that much to do with the players. It's more at a club level.
Sure. Speaking of China, Australia, a very eclectic place. NBL's come on with SBS, which has a reputation for being that multicultural channel. What's the focus of you guys now to incorporate and encourage and invite people from those perhaps non-English-speaking backgrounds, or just very you know, varied backgrounds. What's your sort of efforts there?
I think obviously the SBS channel fit, you know, it's a very diverse channel as far as, you know, everything that they do. But our distribution globally has risen so much. So, you know, terrestrial TV broadcast outside of Australia, I think we're in something like 34 different countries. It's always quite funny seeing it pop up on Twitter or something when someone says, hey, I'm at a bar in Thailand and the NBL's on. Or Coach, I think it was Coach Liam Flynn, who's over in Israel, was tuning into some NBL before his game over in the Israeli league.
Jacob Wiley does the same, yeah.
Yeah, you know, these guys are tuned into us because we've got this international distribution. I think, you know, you talk a little bit about why players are, you know, so acutely aware of the NBL. It's, you know, they're sitting in, I don't know, Greece or something, and they can see us online. They watch us and they say, hey, this looks all right. That stadium's pretty nice. The Red Army are up and about tonight. You know, that's the kind of stuff that helps. I think engaging with, you know, all these different audiences and different channels is, you know, we've got a China strategy as well. We've worked with a third party over there to run our Weibo accounts and stuff like that. So whenever we do go over there, we've got a bit of a brand recognition.
It might sound a little bit sort of schadenfreude, but when you saw the NBA's recent interaction with China, did you see, were you upset or did you see a sort of a business opportunity?
Definitely not a business opportunity. You know, it was such a unique position for them as a business. And I think, you know, they dealt with it in the way they dealt with it. But, yeah, it was such a curious case. And, you know, it is that fine line between people saying what they, you know, believe and, you know, being part of a wider business that might have different objectives. But, yeah, I don't have too much of a concrete take on that one.
NBL Overtime, what's your specifically, are you there at filming, are you working the camera at all or deciding content? How does that go?
I work on it with Liam and the whole crew, so Liam, Cam and Corey all contribute to it. But yeah, I put together the rundown and work with Darren. We do all the graphics internally and put together all the vision. We've got a wider team that obviously work on game night and stuff, and they're the ones that maybe help Liam with Santa's watching every now and then. He's not the one that pulls together everything, thankfully. I don't know if his eyes are that good. Also, he needs to sleep at some point. He can't watch every single game. Yeah. But yeah, we pull together the rundown and roll it out just out of a studio in Melbourne that we've been using, yeah, for 2 years now. But yeah, I'm heavily involved in that, but as of the rest of the team, it's a real group effort. But yeah, definitely a highlight of the week, going and doing that on a Tuesday, because you have no idea what they're going to say, but it's probably going to be entertaining.
Yeah. You stream it out live on Twitter. At least last season, I remember it was almost Twitter was the first place it went out on, and then the others, like YouTube and Facebook. My question is, why is that the case, or am I mistaken? And why is that the case, if so?
Yeah, no, spot on. So it actually started out of our relationship with Twitter. They're great to work with. We've got a really good relationship with them. And it was part of, it came off the back of, we streamed the preseason blitz with them last year. So we had a deal with them to stream all the games, and they support it really, really well, pushing those games out to a wider audience. And at the time, we talked about, you know, what else can we do together, and they kind of brought the concept to us because they were saying, look, we've seen this work in other markets, you know, a panel show, something that's not the broadcast, more discussion-based, and I'll give them a plug, but it's a bit of an our take on SBS's The World Game that Lucy Zeller hosts. They kind of pointed to that as, you know, this is doing really well for us. We think you could do it, and, you know, they were going to support it and promote it a little bit for us. So that's kind of how it went down with Twitter as like the primary vehicle to get it out there. And, you know, to be honest, we kind of started the show and weren't too sure of where it was going to lead. And, you know, Twitter is definitely the audience that it hits at. It is probably more someone who's quite cottoned on to the NBL, pardon the pun, but, you know, they're quite engaged already. That's the kind of person that it's probably more targeted at. And that's why I think it works great on ESPN, actually, because it runs off the back of NBL Slam, which is our highlights show. So if someone was consuming an hour of NBL midweek, they can get all the highlights from every game in half an hour. And then straight off the back of that, you get three people discussing what went down, basically. So that's been a really good fit with ESPN. Mm. But, yeah, it obviously started with Twitter based on that relationship. And as we came into what we call, like, season two, it was also the relationship with Facebook that made sense to push the content across there as well, as we try to reach a larger audience because, you know, they're a great partner and they're very good with promoting our content. I think the main one for me was that YouTube, the live streaming experience, isn't super discoverable for shorter form content. So because we're only streaming for 30 minutes, it's quite hard to discover content when it's live on YouTube. So when it's updated as a VOD asset, so post-show, I've always seen it get a lot more traction. It just doesn't have that discovery algorithm, I guess, when it's live for a 30-minute period. So it works a bit better for us posting it later on.
Makes sense, yeah, because I've noticed that it goes sort of Twitter and then drops off down to YouTube, and that's due to the algorithm. Makes sense. Let's talk about the Looney Tunes that have just come out. How did that come about? I mean, why Looney Tunes? Because I didn't really hear much of that publicised prior to it coming out today.
Yeah, no, it was a great one that came about through First Ever. They've never really driven that, and they're great with this collaboration. Piece. So yeah, came about as an opportunity with them, with Warner Brothers, and yeah, they really ran with it. So I'm pretty sure there's a bit of media going on today up at Movie World to go around as well. So you'll probably see that on our channels at some point today.
Yeah, perfect. Guy, that's really all I've got. My next question is there any projects coming out that you'd like to tease or advertise a little bit?
Probably not right now.
We've
got a fair bit coming during the off-season, some exciting stuff around NBL One, obviously, which we've already announced going into Queensland, so that's a big focus for me at the moment, just because, you know, we've got a lot more live games going out, but yeah, I think, over time it's going to be more content coming through the NBL. We'll work increasingly looking at ourselves as a big content business, a big content aggregator, and you know, hopefully going to be a bit of a basketball go-to place for all basketball-related content.
God, sounds pretty good. I just had a thought. One thing I really liked about overtime in the off-season was that trip to the Summer League. I think one thing that, as just speaking as a fan, and what the messages I get is people are dying to hear more about that NBL discussion from the championship being won, and then how teams build their teams for the next season. That is a thing that there's a great interest in the Twitter sphere anyway. Like, the real diehard fans are really keen for that, and I think maybe even some of those sort of fair or semi-interested fans. So that last season at the Summer League was a real step forward, and hopefully, fingers crossed, there's even more this year or coming.
Yeah, well, it's one of those ones for us where if you look at our business previously, we operated for like 6 months, and then everyone kind of goes, "Oh, we got the season done. What a relief." When do we start again? October. And we prepare for that. But it's definitely not that way anymore. So, you go through the NBL season, it finishes, and straight away, a week later, as it was last season, NBL One begins. You know, you've got natural ties with NBL players. Shortly after that, you've got 3x3 Hustle starting, NBL players involved in that, NBL One players, more NBL content, get through that. Next year, NBA Draft, dare say we'll have a little bit of coverage with that on our channels. You get through that. Last year was incredible because we had Andrew Bogut go back to the NBA, so you had that conversation kept on rolling. That finishes and you're already in June, and then you're like, oh, we're off to Summer League, free agency started, the hype keeps on building, people are talking about us, and then we're already in July. July rolls around and you're talking, Boomers, FIBA qualifiers, all those kind of things popping up. You get through June, you get through July, you're into August, NBL One finals start, NBL One finals conclude, and then you're into preseason. You've got 12 months of NBL content, not including stuff like NBL Next Gen, and a bunch of other stuff that we've got coming on the card. Our goal is to become a 12th month of the year conversation all the time. Water cooler, Twitter sphere, Facebook.
Sure. And obviously this off season, we talked about June. Obviously this June will be even more
exciting with the draft, with, you know, a bunch of guys in it. I guess in that way, what you're saying, how the league has the chance to really push through the whole year, it really would be the envy of, say, an AFL, where once the season ends, it doesn't have a FIBA World Cup. It doesn't have a, you know, more of an international push. Once guys finish in the AFL, they're not going to another league like Andrew Bogut did. So there's a bit of envy there, I'm sure, for the NBL.
Yeah, but they've done a really good job with their trade period. And, you know, talk to any news outlet anywhere, they'll tell you, like, you know, controversy, all that kind of stuff drives a lot of, you know, views and clicks and readership. But straight after that, it's transfer rumours, you know, trade rumours. You know, it's what the NBA thrives on, and it's probably something that, you know, we don't have as much, but you know, I think last year was a real wild free agency for us, and hopefully it's only going to, like, go up to another notch this off-season.
Makes sense, Guy. Thanks very much for your time. I really appreciate it.
Right, well, perfect, everyone. I hope you enjoyed that episode. As always, like and subscribe to the podcast, and that way when a new one comes out, it immediately gets downloaded. And if you're on Apple or whatever pod platform you use to listen to this, you can rate and review the show, positive, negative, whatever you want to do. Just quietly though, after I spoke to Guy, I thought of a question that I want answered, and I sent it to him. And my question to him was, Guy, where do you stand on the NBL being an Australian summertime sport? Would returning to a Southern Hemisphere winter time slot help the NBL align as the NBA's alternative? He said, Guy replied, I don't have a strong view on it, but I couldn't see it happening now. We're pretty entrenched in summer and have now filled the winter gap with NBL 1. One of the underappreciated draw cards of the NBL for imports is how early that we finish, and that's something I don't think we want to lose. A guy can play here, make good money for 6 months, and then go get a contract for the rest of the season in the Europe or the G League. We enable them to have more opportunities to make more money once the season ends. So that's, you know, the guy's thoughts on that issue, which is a prevailing one that's in the background, but something to think about.